KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
You're tuned into KAEB 91.9 FM. All music, all the time.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a bill on February 21st that aims to reverse Alaska's ban on finfish farming. As reported by KUCB's Theo Greenlee, Alaska currently only allows aquaculture for shellfish and kelp. Dunleavy says the bill would allow farmers to breed and develop finfish stocks, although salmon farming would remain prohibited. But some lawmakers are pushing back. State Representative Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican and chair of the House Fisheries Committee, told legislators during a House floor session that the bill could put Alaska's wild fisheries at risk while the industry is still struggling.
Lifting a ban on fin fish farming, regardless of which species, regardless of saltwater or freshwater, would be sending the wrong signal to the industry, fishing communities, and fishing families across the state that are struggling currently to recover.
The bill faces significant hurdles in the state legislature. Stutes, along with House Fisheries Committee Vice Chair Bryce Edgman, released a statement opposing the bill. Fish farming was outlawed in Alaska in 1990 following widespread opposition from lawmakers and the public. Although the bill excludes salmon farming, Stutes warned it could set the stage.
Pursuing freshwater finfish farming of any kind is a foot in the door for salmon farming in Alaska.
The global aquaculture industry is worth more than $6 billion. China leads the sector, producing about one-third of the global output, according to a 2024 study from the United Nations. The United States produces about 2%. Dunleavy's proposed bill would limit fish farming methods to, quote, inland closed system bodies of water, close quote. Alicia Bishop is the regional aquaculture coordinator for NOAA. She says that means stocked ponds and fish tanks.
We're not talking about open water cages or any other cultivation method like that. So this would be, you know, on land, closed ponds, or recirculating aquaculture systems.
The bill also requires any farmed fish be sterilized so they couldn't reproduce if they did escape the tanks. Still, its path and any current support in the legislature remains unclear.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Red king crab commercial permit holders in southeast Alaska will have a better chance of fishing in the coming seasons. That's after the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved a change in management regulations that was proposed by the state. It allows for a smaller, conservative commercial fishery when crab stocks aren't enough to open the typical competitive fishery. KFSK's Olivia Rose reports from Petersburg.
Red king crab is a low-volume, high-value fishery. The crabs can bring in over $100 each, but commercial openings have been few and far between, just one in over a decade. Andy Kiddem's crabs out of Petersburg. He and a number of fellow commercial crabbers testified to the Alaska Board of Fisheries at their meeting in Ketchikan in January.
Had we fished that 117,000 pounds in 2024, it would have been worth over $2 million to the state of Alaska's fishermen. The economic trickle-down to our processors and coastal communities would have doubled that. So let's move this arbitrary threshold. Simple enough. Change the regulation and harvest the surplus king crab when available.
That quote-unquote arbitrary threshold refers to a regional 200,000-pound minimum that was set decades ago when the crab were less valuable and the industry only made money on higher volumes. There needs to be that much crab in order for a competitive commercial fishery to happen. But the state's Red King crab stock estimates for the region have repeatedly fallen short of that minimum threshold. And without a commercial opening, crabs that could have been caught stay in the water and out of commercial pots. That's partly why for years, permit holders and the department have been trying to form a new way to harvest the resource.
Fishermen, processors, and EDF&G developed this proposal to allow a controlled crab fishery, which will keep the harvest at the prescribed level. It will give fishermen an opportunity to go to work, give local processors an opportunity to keep their workers employed. Everyone wins, and that's why Proposal 243 has widespread industry support.
The proposal, which was submitted by Alaska's Department of Fish and Game, garnered unanimous support from the Board of Fish. Member Curtis Chamberlain of Anchorage commended the department and said he was moved by the innovation of fishermen when facing a marginalized resource.
I found a lot of that discussion, quite frankly, inspiring, because if there's one thing we're finding is a lot of these markets are becoming marginalized and we have to find ways to operate within this new dynamic. And the Red King crab fishery has and the fishermen have shown, if nothing, adaptable.
The proposal's approval means that when Red King crab estimates fall short of 200,000 pounds, a smaller conservative commercial fishery can open for a given season. In that scenario, a so-called individual catch limit, or ICL, gets assigned to permit holders based on how much crab can be fished. Department officials say it's a management tool, and there's still a chance the fishery closes before a permit holder has taken their full ICL. They also say this biologically based harvest strategy doesn't give the fishermen a guaranteed or set amount of Red King crab harvest every year. Adam Messmer is the State Department's lead shellfish biologist for the region.
Looking back over the history, if this was implemented, it would have opened the fishery, I believe, twice in the last 20 years. It's not going to make it a free-for-all. This isn't going to be something that happens every single year. It would add a very minute amount of opportunity.
But even so, a number of commercial fishermen who testified said it's a step in the right direction. The board's approval of the proposal followed their unanimous rejection of a different Red King crab proposal from a Juneau-based group. That proposal aimed to eliminate commercial fishing for Red King crab in the Juneau area, where the state estimates that a quarter of the region's Red King crab reside. Instead, the proposal asked that the personal use fishery have 100% of the harvest. Board member Tom Carpenter of Cordova asked Messmer how removing that area's portion of the region's crab from the 200,000-pound minimum would impact the commercial fishery.
If this were to pass, will you be able to execute the Red King crab fishery at all in the future on the commercial side of things?
The way the regulations are now with the thresholds, no, Member Carpenter.
The total allocation the Juneau proposal asked for raised red flags for board members. Member Chamberlain said it went too far.
If the Alaska fishery was a body, this proposal would be cutting off the right arm to support the left. I think the long-term implications and damage to the overall body of the Alaska fishery cannot justify benefiting the personal use. As much as I love Alaskans to have crab meat in their freezer or in their pots, I can't go that far.
The Board of Fish unanimously opposed the idea, and the Juneau Group's proposal failed. Southeast commercial red king crab season, if it opens, typically happens in November. The last time it opened in 2017, fishermen caught about 120,000 pounds, worth around $1.3 million at the docks. Reporting from Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
A collaboration between a Washington State nonprofit organization and a Northwest Arctic Health Association distributed thousands of pounds of salmon in Kotzebue last month. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
On a cold afternoon, a line of cars and snow machines idle in front of Manilik Health Center. Kotzebue residents wait to receive five-pound bags of salmon. It's sockeye salmon, cut and vacuum-sealed into individual portions. Employees hand out the bags to eager residents one at a time, while others unload and open 30-pound boxes of fish. The salmon is from SeaShare, a Washington State nonprofit.
The kind of the gist of it is to receive high protein, high quality, nutritious seafood to distribute to community members within our region.
Levi Gilbert works at Manilik's Special Projects Program. His department, along with Manilik's Diabetes Program, coordinated with SeaShare to distribute the fish. Gilbert says in total, over 7,000 pounds of salmon were handed out in Kotzebue. He says his department worked with Manilik's Elder Services and Hunters Program to distribute salmon to the community's elders beforehand.
So ensuring that those populations are receiving fish and likely going to be hand-delivered to their households.
Gilbert says Manilik Association has done similar fish giveaways in the past, but this was the first time working with SeaShare. According to its website, SeaShare began as a way to distribute bycatch, which are fish unintentionally caught while targeting other species. A representative from SeaShare said in an email that the fish was purchased from an unnamed Alaska seafood company. To date, the organization says it has distributed over 200,000 pounds of fish to over a dozen mostly rural Alaskan communities. Its goal is to address food security and supply chain issues to provide better access to Alaska seafood. Josh Fillable is a coordinator for Manilik's Diabetes Program. He says that the fish comes at a critical time, following a dismal salmon season.
A lot of people are used to eating salmon, but people weren't able to catch that much. People have said how excited they are to get this.
Last year, Kotzebue Sound's commercial salmon fishery experienced a dramatic crash, with one of the worst returns on record. Fillable says Manilik is working with SeaShare to coordinate additional seafood distributions in the region's outlying villages. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Now, the rest of the story. It was a charming house on Tiger Tail Road. Not exactly an enchanted cottage, but a warm home where once upon a time something quite enchanting happened. Larry was a teenager with a crush on a schoolmate named Diane. And one day Larry got up the nerve to call Diane, ask her out for the movies Friday night. Diane said she'd love to go, but she could not. Not Friday. Friday she was singing at a local Elks Club dance. What about Saturday? No, said Larry, he was busy with his family Saturday, and he was feeling rather dejected. until what Diane had said finally registered. "You sing?" Larry remarked. And Diane answered, "Yes, a little, for meetings and things." At any rate, Larry's solution to their dating dilemma was that he could meet Diane at the Elks Club. After she was through singing, they could go on from there to the movies. Diane asked her mom, and mom said yes, and that would have been all there was to it, except Larry arrived at the Elks Club an hour early that Friday evening. He got there at 9 instead of 10, when Diane had said she would be finished. So, Larry heard his little girlfriend sing with the band, and all at once something wonderful distracted him from Diane's sparkling blue eyes, her even more scintillating voice. It was all that he could talk about for weeks. Diane was such a great singer. How come she had not been discovered by a talent scout or something? At home, you remember the home on Tiger Tail Road? Larry started to get teased, especially by his sister Donna. Larry's current big thing is how Donna referred to Diane whenever Larry praised his girlfriend's talent, and that would usually invite an appeal to a higher court. You do believe me, don't you, Dad? And Dad would smile at his teenage son. Surely Diane must be a good singer if she was performing for different groups around town, Dad would say. You should hear her sing, Larry would always inject insistently. And Dad would always answer, oh, yes, yes, he would. He should someday. I think Dad would have been more eager to oblige young Larry had he not been such a busy man. But as it was, Larry kept insisting and Dad kept agreeing until somehow he never managed to meet the young lady who had so impressed his son until one day. Dad was home from work, sick in bed with a cold. He was propped up in bed reading when suddenly the bedroom door was flung open and walked Larry with Diane. Yes, she had been brought there by Larry to sing, and she sang. And if possible, Larry's dad was even more impressed than his son had been. And the rest is history. Did I mention that Diane never sang alone? No, she always sang with her three younger sisters. And she, Diane, was only 15. But it had all begun as a Friday night movie date in 1955, which led to the discovery of the Lennon sisters by young Larry's bedridden dad, a band leader named Lawrence Welk. And now her music is outlasting his. And what do you know? She is still performing in Branson, Missouri. And now you know the rest of the story.
This is statewide news from Alaska Public Media. I'm Tim Rocky. British Columbia Premier David Eby said Thursday that he intends to introduce legislation that would place tolls on commercial trucks traveling from the lower 48 to Alaska via his province, the Alaska Beacon reports. Speaking at the Legislative Assembly Building in Victoria, Eby said the move is one of several that he is taking in response to President Donald Trump's erratic Canadian tariff plans. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy said he hopes British Columbia will reconsider. Earlier in the day, the Alaska Senate had been planning to vote on a resolution praising Alaska's relationship with Canada, but that was pulled from the floor for unspecified reasons. Trump has twice said he will impose a 25% tariff on commerce from Canada and Mexico, only to recant once and change his mind the second time. On Thursday, he signed an order delaying the Canadian tariff for a month. Canada is pressing ahead with response initiatives. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced retaliatory tariffs on Wednesday, and the leaders of individual provinces have announced additional measures. Even if tolls are imposed on Alaska-bound traffic, it may not have a significant effect on cargo. More than 90% of Alaska-bound cargo is shipped by ocean, according to state statistics. The three heli skiers killed Tuesday in a massive avalanche near Girdwood all had Minnesota ties. Alaska State Troopers identified the men as 39-year-old David Linder from Florida, 39-year-old Charles Eppard from Montana, and 38-year-old Jeremy Leif from Minnesota. They were on a guided backcountry ski trip with friends, according to the Minnesota Star Tribune. Linder leaves behind a wife and three young sons. He co-owned several Minnesota radio stations with managing partner Matt Kettleson, who praised him in a prepared statement posted on the station's website.
I will remember Dave Linder as an amazing family man, one of the smartest people I've ever known, and someone who lived life to the fullest.
The Star Tribune said Leif was a Minneapolis resident and Eppard had attended college in St. Peter, Minnesota. Troopers said the men were skiing Tuesday afternoon with Girdwood-based Chugach Powder guides. They were caught in a slide near 20 Mile River, and guides said the avalanche beacons indicated they were buried in 40 to 100 feet of snow. Troopers tried to reach the site Wednesday, but were stopped by poor weather. They were making an aerial assessment of the slide area Thursday to determine whether recovery work could be done safely. The Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center forecasted high avalanche danger in the area Thursday at elevations above 1,000 feet. Additional snow yesterday meant both natural and human-triggered avalanches were possible. The center advised against travel in avalanche terrain. This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by
Matson, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at matson.com/Alaska.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Raymond James, a firm focused on transforming lives, businesses, and communities through tailored wealth management, banking, and capital markets solutions. Disclosures at RaymondJames.com.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Tim Rocky. Alaska's National Weather Service offices have not been spared from the Trump administration's efforts to slash the federal workforce. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the already understaffed agency's workforce has been cut back significantly, and lawmakers are raising concerns.
According to a source affiliated with the Union for National Weather Service Employees, resignations and firings have resulted in the loss of at least 23 Weather Service employees across Alaska. The person requested anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. Rick Toman, a climatologist who spent 30 years with the National Weather Service, says the job cuts are already impacting forecasts. Last month, officials with the agency announced they would indefinitely suspend weather balloon launches from Kotzebue. Toman says weather balloon stations in Nome and Bethel also saw outages in recent days, though they've since come back online.
That is going to impact every single weather model run in the world.
Toman says forecasting is a complex science, and the three-dimensional view of the atmosphere that weather balloons provide is unique.
That's the primary use of those upper air observations. So not just the weather models run in the U.S., weather models run in Canada, weather models run in Europe, weather models run in South Africa, because effectively, these are all global models.
Roughly 800 people were fired across the Weather Service's parent agency, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's according to a report from the publication Axios last month. And that includes at least 10 of the nearly two dozen lost Weather Service employees in Alaska, according to the union source. Others resigned after receiving the so-called fork in the road email from the Office of Personnel Management, offering federal workers what amounts to a buyout. The source says the firings and resignations include meteorologists, IT and electronics staff, administrative assistants, and more. Altogether, the Weather Service Alaska region has lost 10% of its staff, according to data from the Office of Personnel Management. And taken together with positions that were already unfilled, it adds up to a roughly 30% vacancy rate across the state's Weather Service offices. And that has decimated morale, according to the union source. They say meteorologists don't just check their work at the door. It's not just their job, it's their passion, it's their hobby. And they say it's getting harder and harder for employees to focus on the mission while they're worried about getting an email that might give them an hour to collect their things and head out the door. Toman, the climatologist, says he expects the effects of the cutbacks to compound as time goes on.
You're going to have fewer people working more. It's going to be, you're going to have burnout. You're going to have stuff be missed.
And with fewer people maintaining the dozens of automated weather stations across the state, Toman says he expects data outages like the weather balloon stations in western Alaska to happen more often and last longer. Political leaders across the state are raising concerns about the Weather Service cutbacks. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski said in a statement that Alaskans from fishermen to firefighters lean heavily on accurate weather forecasts. She says the cuts will have real consequences for Alaskans. Independent State House Representative Elise Galvin of Anchorage, who's been tracking federal firings, says she's concerned about the impact on public safety. Republican Congressman Nick Begich also expressed concern in a statement, but he said the staff reductions highlighted the need to leverage, quote, third-party data. A variety of companies offer private weather forecasting services, but Toman, the climatologist, says few companies are willing to take on the considerable cost of maintaining launch sites across the country and around the world.
I don't even know if it's possible, but if it would be possible, you would be paying an immense amount of money for that, just to, for what the Weather Service does now at a, you know, per capita, a minimal cost for the U.S. taxpayer.
He says the business model just doesn't make sense. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
This is Alaska Public Media.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart. You see, it's getting late. Oh, please don't hesitate. Put a little love.
Yeah, we'll start out here with a little Eddie Arnold with Cuddlin' Buggin' Baby. There it is. Chris Christopherson with Road Warriors Lament. And then Dwight Yoakam with One More Name.
When the weather's kinda chilly and we start to kiss and hug, everybody thinks she's silly 'cause she wants to cuddle bug. That cuddle buggin' baby of mine keeps cuddle buggin' all the time. Honey sweet, double treat, that cuddle buggin' baby of mine. When we go to see a movie and the lights are way down low, I can tell she'd rather cuddle bug than stay and see the show. That cuddle buggin' baby of mine keeps cuddle buggin' all the time. I repeat, ain't she sweet, that cuddle buggin' baby of mine. When the band begins to playin' and they start to cut a rug, I can almost hear her saying, let's go home and cuddle bug. That cuddle buggin' baby of mine keeps cuddle buggin' all the time. Turtle dove, full of love, that cuddle buggin' baby of mine. I love my little darling, and I guess I always will. When it comes to cuddle bugging, I just never get my fill of that cuddle bugging, baby mine. Keeps cuddle bugging all the time. Makes this boy jump with joy. That cuddle bugging baby of mine. Stars, for as far as I can see, in the silence where you are, do you ever dream of me? The moon is dark, the night is silver, while perfume is on the breeze. I feel the stars, cold as forever, half as true, you and me. I'll be your friend, I'll be your lover, I'll be whatever you ever need, right to the end, until it's over. I swear to you, you can count on me.
Friends tried to tell me you were stepping around, but I wouldn't hear it. No, I shut them all down low. But now I'm thinking you made a fool out of me, 'cause the words that are slipping spell grief and misery. One more name, one more name you call out in your sleep. One more name and I'll know it's not a lie. One more name, one more name that your lips does creep. One more name and our love will surely die. Tortured by the rumors about you, listening in silence to whispers of truth, deceived by the soft kiss you forge every day, while each night the same lips give your secret away. One more name, one more name you call out in your sleep. One more name and I know it's not a lie. One more name that your lips does creep. One more name and our love will surely die. One more name you call out in your sleep. One more name and I'll know it's not a lie. One more name that from your lips does creep. One more name and our love will surely die. One more name and our love will surely die.
And Jimmy Rogers is next with Hobo Meditation, 1932. After that, Dick Curtis with Streets of Laredo. That's a newer one, 1965. And then Tex Williams with Banjo Polka.
Yonder in heaven got a place that we might call our home. Will we have to wait for a living, or can we continue to roam? Oh, dee-dee, oh, dee-dee, oh, dee-dee, oh, dee-dee, oh, dee-dee. Will there be any freight trains in heaven? Any boxcars in which we might hide? Will there be any tough cops and brakemen? Will they tell us we cannot ride? Will the hobo chum with the
the rich man? Will he always have money to spare? Will they have respect for a hobo in the land that lies hidden up there? Freight trains in heaven, any boxcars in which we might hide? Will there be any tough cops and brakemen? Will they tell us that we cannot ride? Will the hobo chum with the rich man? Will he always have money to spare? Will they have respect for a hobo in the land that lies hidden up there? Oh-de-dee, oh-de-dee, oh-de-dee.
As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day, I spied a young cowboy all wrapped in white linen, wrapped in white linen and as cold as the clay. I see by your outfit that you are a cowboy. These words he did say as I boldly walked by. Come sit down beside me and hear my sad story. I'm shot in the breast and I know I must die. It was once in the saddle I used to go dashing. Once in the saddle I used to go gay. First down to Rosie's and then to the card house. I'm shot in the breast and I'm dying today. Get 16 gamblers to carry my coffin. 6 pretty maidens to sing me a song. Take me to the valley and lay the sod o'er me, for I'm a young cowboy and I know I've done wrong. So beat the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. Play the death march as they carry me along. Put bunches of roses all over my coffin. Roses to deaden the clods as they fall. As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day, I spied a young cowboy all wrapped in white linen, wrapped in white linen and as cold as the clay.
Thank you.
la while we dance a polka proud. Ring, ring, ring the banjo till we rock the room and rafters spill.
Cool. Now we have Roy Acuff, or Acuff, I don't know. Never knew how to pronounce his name. I'll forgive you, but I can't forget. There's a great one. Then Waylon Jennings with Waltz Me to Heaven. We have a little bit of Poncho and Lefty. That's Merle and Willie. We might have some time for some Dolly Parton, too, with Porter Wagoner. A piece called Always, Always.
Forget that our plans were upset. I tried oh so hard not to remember. I'll forgive you, but I can't forget. Somewhere I hope you are happy, and I hope your heart holds no regret. Each night I pray the Lord to watch o'er you. I'll forgive you, but I can't forget. Love you forever. What a pity that we ever met. For life's not worth living without you. I'll forgive you, but I can't forget.
It's been a long time since I've had a good time, and I think it's high time I did. Could I have this dance? It feels like romance, and it's good to be feeling like this. The lights are down low, the band's playing slow to the beautiful Tennessee waltz. How many love songs, how many dance floors have lovers like us waltzed across? So waltz me to heaven. To the waltz of the angels we'll blissfully glide. On past the Milky Way to paradise. Won't you waltz me to heaven? Stars in our eyes, won't you waltz me to heaven tonight? Waltz me to heaven tonight. Hold your heavenly body against mine so tight as the band softly plays on this magical night. We'll dance past the Milky Way to paradise, with the moon as our halo and the stars in our eyes. Won't you waltz me to heaven tonight? Won't you waltz me to heaven?
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. And now you wear your skin like iron, and your breath is hard as kerosene. You weren't your mama's only boy, but her favorite one, it seemed. She began to cry when you said goodbye. Sank into your dream. Pancho was a bandit boy. His horse was fast as polished steel. He wore his gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Well, Pancho met his match, you know, on the deserts down in Mexico. Nobody heard his dying words. Oh, but that's the way it goes.
sing the blues all night long like he used to. The dust of poncho bit down south, ended up and left his mouth. The day they laid poor Poncho low, the lefty split for Ohio, where he got the bread to go. There ain't nobody knows. All the Federalists say they could have had him any day. We only let him slip away out of kindness, I suppose.
Hotel, the desert's quiet, Cleveland's cold, and so the story ends, we're told. Poncho needs your prayers, it's true, save a few for Lefty too. He only did what he had to do, and now he's growing old.
Darling, will you?